Hello, welcome to the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined by Chris Baines and Matt Oper. How's it going, Chris?
I'm pretty good, Scott. We're in a bit of a, you know, crazy little off season that not a lot of us expected a few weeks ago. Matt, how you doing? How you adjusting?
Yeah, it's a brave new world. I'm seeing how it goes. I'm optimistic.
Yeah. But
yeah, I'm happy with Brennan as a coach. I think he kind of ticks a lot of the boxes that you're looking for in a successor to Mick. But at this point, we're just kind of in wait-and-see mode in terms of how he fills out his staff, how he goes about replacing the losses that he is sure to sustain. Because anytime there's a coaching change in college basketball, the roster that he inherits is nothing like the roster that will take the floor in, what, 7 months' time? Not even 7 months' time, but it's going to be drastically different than what it is now.
Yeah, and we're seeing a lot of, like, anxiety on the Twitterverse and all the social medias and everything, and we're kind of in uncharted territory here. You know, for the past 30 years, we've had two coaches. Like, basically my entire lifetime, UC has had two basketball coaches, Bob Huggins and Mick Cronin. You know, you can maybe throw in Andy Kennedy there, but he was kind of a stopgap. But it's basically been Mick Cronin and Bob Huggins, and we knew exactly what to expect each offseason, either a reloading or a slight rebuild. But that's basically been it, and there hasn't been much shakeup, and we haven't really been through this where a coach actually gets hired on to a big program from the UC basketball program. That hasn't been something we've experienced, and this is just what you go through in the first few weeks. There's the announcement, and then there's turnover, and then things start to kind of come together in a few months, but just have to be patient, and that's something that we're not really used to. So it's just a big adjustment.
No, and it's, they just, like, comparing and contrasting this process to the football process, which we are all intimately familiar with. Like you said, this doesn't happen to basketball often. UC coaches don't generally leave for other jobs. They either retire or they get fired in basketball. That historically, that has been what happens. They don't just kind of, or they get in a fight with the university president and go down in a blaze of glory. You know, that's how transitions happen in this program historically. So this is such an outlier and such an anomaly that it's really fascinating to watch, because almost nobody has experience with how this works. Be that, you know, fans, administrators, boosters, it's all new.
Especially the part with all the roster turnover, because it's really something we haven't seen, like, really too much in any era besides when a lot of guys would just declare in the Huggins era. Like, we talked about it some, like, last week with, like, Nysia Brooks transferring. That turned out to be official. Jerron Cumberland, like, officially threw his name in the draft. Like, some of the other roster spots seem like they're in flux. Reports of UC reaching out to some of the higher profile transfers. It's kind of like the weird and exciting both at the same time. And it'd be really interesting to see what actually happens with this roster and how it gels. Because like you said, Matt, like there's so much time between now and then when practice actually starts that it'd be really interesting to see how things like end up shaking out.
Yeah, well, where we're at, like, right now, go ahead, Matt.
Well, I was gonna say, like, I would have been very interested to see what exactly John Brennan would do with this roster, because it's really not a roster that's built for him. It's built for Mick, and in terms of offensive philosophy and general basketball philosophy, there is a lot of distance between where John Brennan rests and where Mick Cronin rests, And to see what he could do with this roster that is so clearly not built for him and his style and his scheme would have been really interesting. I don't know if it would have been successful, but it would have been interesting. But it really looks like with the amount of turnover that is going to take place with this program, we're not going to see that because he's going to get a chance to bring in quite a few people who are more fits with his scheme and his style.
Yeah, and as we kind of like have been following a little bit, Rashawn Fredericks, he's out, he's gone. There's like probably less than a 1% chance he actually re-signs with UC. Nysier Brooks put his name in. He's getting some interest from Miami, Florida, Ohio State, NC State, LSU, LaSalle, which would be local for him in Philly. Fredericks, I didn't really think was have a place here, but Brooks, you know, I could have seen him in the offense. Obviously, Trey Scott had a lot of contact with Brannon, so being recruited by him at Alabama. Brooks, though, you know, he's not really a three-point shooter. We talked about this last week, Scott. It seems like Brannon really emphasizes the three ball, not only from not only in general, but especially from his big men as well, so they can kind of be a dual threat out there. Brooks isn't really a three-point shooter. Trey Scott at least kind of brings that. I mean, your guys' mind was the Brooks putting his name into the transfer portal like a bit of a surprise, or do you think he fits on the roster at all? From my perspective, I'm a little surprised that he did put his name in, considering he did come on strong as a junior last season. He was a big threat out there.
No, I'm not surprised at all. He had a really good junior season for sure, from where he started the year, where he was just unplayable against Ohio State, to where he ended. He probably made more growth than anybody else on this team. But the reason he is able to make that kind of growth is that, you know, there is Mick showed a willingness and an ability to make sure that he got his post touches, 10 to 15 of them a game. You know, Brennan, from what I've seen of his offense, he's not going to go out of his way to get him those touches. So he'd have to get his offense in the flow of it, you know, as a screener and a dive man in the pick and roll situation, or just through offensive rebounding. He wasn't going to get the top with the way that Brennan is probably going to play. He was not going to get the opportunity to feature quite like he wanted to. And you got to remember, like, as a 6'11 big man, he is going to get professional opportunities. He's probably never going to sniff the NBA, but he can make a lot of money over in Europe if he has a showcase senior year. And if he's stuck with UC, there's no guarantee that showcase would materialize. Like, whereas if Mick stayed, he knew for sure he was going to get those opportunities, not just this year, but going on.
Yeah, it seemed like it almost didn't matter who the coach was who came in. It seemed like he was, like, once Mick left, he was going to, like, put his name out there to see where else he could go. Because it seemed like all the rumors were out there as soon as Mick left that he was going to leave. So I guess good for him. Because I think his style of play, like you really said, what Matt was is really conducive to what Mick did. And I think you have a coach that's not really committed to like offensive rebounding and like funneling things into Brooks like Mick's system was, like especially on that defensive end where he was allowed to be like a big time shot blocker and he was really killed the offensive glass. Like then it's like time to see like where else he could end up starting and playing huge minutes. Especially as a guy who isn't really a major threat from three and really didn't shoot that great from two as a big man.
Yeah, the only aspect of his game that I thought could kind of flourish in Brannon's system is just his ability to get out there and be kind of a shot blocker and get out there in transition and you know provide some tips and rebounds in that respect. I mean, he wasn't really going to run the floor like you'd expect that he should be running in this system. I mean, Brannon's offense isn't like, you know, North Carolina where they run, 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 and then when they're done running, they run some more. But it is faster than what Mick ran. I mean, most every system was, but Brandon's especially was. I think he's in like the low hundreds in terms of pace, something like that. So, you know, Brooks definitely had an opportunity to get out there and use his athleticism to get tips, to get quick rebounds, to be a shot blocker in transition, to get the alley-oop dunks. But I do agree. I think he was kind of out of place in the new system. And, you know, having an opportunity closer to home or with the Miami or at Ohio State or an NC State or at LSU or whatever probably would have been a better fit than what Brandon was going to bring in.
Yeah, for sure. Like, he wasn't going to get the kind of opportunities that he wanted to get under the new regime. I mean, like, it's perfectly understandable from both parties' side. I mean, like, Nysir Brooks is probably not Brennan's kind of player. And, you know, Brooks really needs to, you know, it's a senior year. He needs to look out for himself because, you know, he does have a chance to make a very healthy living playing this game. He just has to have the opportunities. And transferring to a much bigger, higher profile program, at least in name, would probably do that.
I think of all the schools that have like been bandied about for him, like LSU seems like it'd be a really interesting fit, just like given the style that they play, it's like really like a lot faster, and like they emphasize a lot of the things that he's good at, like offensive rebounding, they were really good at that, like blocking shots. It seems like if he went there, that'd be a really interesting fit. I think more so than some of the other places like NC State or Ohio State. But like, it'll be interesting to see where he ends up winding up. So I think he could have a pretty decent senior season. And like on top of that, it was like this is really his only real chance to go somewhere else as well. So if like he was not committed to Cincinnati, like he's got to do what's best for him. And like, he'll be a really big piece missing, like just rebounding wise, since he was a really great offensive rebounder in conference play, like the best in the conference in offensive rebounding and one of the best shot blockers in the conference. It'll be really interesting to see how Brandon tries to fill that hole in the roster. It's like you really have to bank on like Sosame and like Diarra to grow in their contributions or whatever transfer they end up bringing in.
Yeah, and I think that's it. I think you fill the Brooks role with Diarra, or you do what everyone has been begging for, or at least the three of us have been begging for the last several years. Go with four guards / wings and a big man, Trey Scott. You know, have Trey Scott play 30 minutes with Diarra coming in for filler time or in fouls, and, you know, run out your four best players on the other spots, which are guards and wings.
But like, still, like you end up, you do need somebody who is like at least some kind of threat to shot block. Like, is like, one of Trey Scott's like best qualities is like he's much more versatile. He's definitely not a shot blocker.
True.
In trade. Like, so you'd be missing really you'd be missing something in the middle. If like one of those other guys didn't blossom into like some kind of backup defender.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're going to give up a little bit of shot blocking with Brooks. You know, a little bit of around the rim ability to get up and you know, get layups and stuff like that. He showed that, like, especially down the stretch. But I mean, that's a trade-off, right? You're trading some of that off for the ability to get more three-point shooters in the game and getting better quality shots from elsewhere, which is kind of the whole theme of the Brandon regime, right?
Yeah, I mean, that is the theme of this. That is going to be the theme of this coaching regime for sure. And I'm really interested to see what he does with Diarra because he's a guy who just has immense, immense talent. But, you know, we all knew that it would take 3 years for him to figure it out on defense and to earn Vic's trust. And, like, he's an intriguing player because he is so athletic and raw. But, like, his offensive instincts are really good. Like, he did a lot of good things when he was on the floor in terms of shot selection. His passing was better than I expected. And I think he can be a really intriguing option because I trust Brennan to unlock the potential of him. And there's so much potential there because he is 6'9". He can be a shot blocker. He can be a good defender. But he's also not really a post player. He's more of a perimeter player at that size. And that seems tailor-made for what this offense is going to need.
Yeah, and it being year three in the system for DR as well. Or at least with the program, like, getting everything that he hypothetically needs to blossom. Like, when you just, like, watch the team practice, like, he's one of the guys that definitely stands out. So he's got, like, a ton of talent. And it's just, like, he hasn't played basketball that long. And he's, like, 6'9", like, 200 pounds. Like, so, if he can, like, make another step this year, like, he can definitely be a guy that ends up taking, like, a ton of minutes and it's, like, a pleasant surprise. Like, I'm really interested to see how he grows. Because, like you said, like, the pieces are there. And it's like he just hasn't, like, unlocked the puzzle completely yet. And, like, you could almost say the same thing for Sosume, who has, like, good instincts, but he's just, like, can't consistently get it all done. And Sosume is, like, is a worse offensive player than DR. You can't look at Sosume's stats from last year and make any claim that he was a great offensive player. But in fact, those guys can come along this summer and, like, get used to the new system. Like, maybe one of them, like, turns into, like, some type of pick-and-roll, like, dive guy that we see in, like, the NBA playoffs. Like, UC really hasn't done anything like that in a really long time. So, if they could have something like that with one of those guys, like, as a bench or, like, a sixth man type of guy, that'd be really interesting. Because, like, you can throw... Pretty much every other guy on the roster can at least hypothetically play a perimeter spot.
Yeah, and we're still waiting to see if and when other shoes are going to drop. I mean, the potential is definitely there for Logan Johnson to fall and pick out to UCLA. I don't think that's a shocking statement to anybody. I mean... Savino was the guy who recruited him. Savino's out there now. He is a California kid. He's not from L.A. He's from San Jose, which is like 22 miles away or 22 hours away. Miles and hours, different things. So like, he could go. Keith Williams, I don't expect him to go, but it's possible. Like right now they have, what, five scholarships to offer that are open?
They have. Well, I think it's four, but five if you count Cumberland if he leaves, but no one thinks he's going to leave, right?
Didn't he hire an agent?
He can go ahead, Scott.
He hired one of the NCAA-approved agents.
Oh, so he hired an advisor.
Yeah, yes. So he can go through the process and come back if he wants to.
Yeah, he has like May 29th, I think is like the drop-dead date. I think... Four is probably, like, there's no way Cumberland goes to the NBA, right? Not this season.
I don't know. Like, G League players are now making substantial money. Like, that is a viable path. Whether or not he chooses to take it, I don't really know. But, like, that is one of the worries for me is that he... would be a perfect for a program that's for a NFL for an NBA team that's doing really well. He's kind of a perfect stash guy, just because, you know, if you have a lot of depth on the wing and you need, but you have some question marks in terms of who can return, whether or not you got like a lot of free agents coming up. He's a guy that you can draft, stash, have him develop in the G League, and then, you know, kind of test his metal periodically throughout the year. On a two-way contract, like that is a possibility, and there's a lot of NBA teams who are now thinking very hard about how to use the G League as a developmental tool, not just for the players themselves, but in terms of molding guys to fit into the scheme that they're playing.
Yeah, and like if you're Cumberland, you got to weigh the fact that you're. you have to adjust to a new system. You can probably put up similar numbers, but it's still going to be an adjustment to a new system. And you're going to be a year older. Like, that's a year less salary you're not getting in the G League or in Europe somewhere. I mean, my head says that he comes back. Like, he comes back, tries to pad a resume, and tries to get into, you know, a high second-round pick. Like, right now, I think he's something like the 90s out of, like, the top 100 NBA prospects for the draft next month, or in 2 months, or whenever the hell. I don't follow the NBA. It's sometime this summer, I guess.
Almost July.
Yeah, okay, so 3 months. So I was close. And it's one of those things where it's like, to your point, Matt, does he test the waters and potentially get, like, a late second, like, squeeze into the late second round and get a G League contract? And then he gets to have an extra year in the G League making a few tens of thousands of dollars, or he risks coming back to UC in a new system, pads a resume, maybe gets an All-American stamp on him, and he gets a high second-round pick and loses an extra year of making that kind of money. I don't know. I mean, that's just something that Cumberland just has to figure out for himself.
Yeah, and, like, for what it's worth, I love Jerron Cumberland and the way that he plays, but he's not really a great fit for the modern NBA just because he's such a, you know, in 1995, he would have been a phenomenal NBA prospect. And just because of his size, his skill, his willingness to kind of put his head down and get to the rim whenever he wants, like, that was something that was extremely valued. And like, he's a good three-point shooter. But he's not a great one. That's not really, like, I would say Jacob Evans shooting over his, even though the percentages probably don't back that up. I was just always more confident in Evans' shot, especially off the dribble.
Yeah, I think, I mean, most scouting reports, it seems like, you know, he's got to be able to create his shot a little better. He does a nice job of that now, but it's, you know, like, to your point, Matt, I mean, everybody in the NBA can create their own shot. And Cumberland has a few holes to fill there. Maybe lose a little bit of weight, develop a little better quickness. I mean, that's something that you can't really do. I feel like you're better capable of doing that as a senior in college than, like, whatever the hell they're throwing at you in, like, the developmental league or in Europe.
Well, that's really going to be the question, because he could go with a developmental route and stay in the country, or he could make a pretty substantial amount of money in Europe right now, especially if he gets into one of the higher-profile leagues, be it, you know, Greece, Spain, France. In those countries, you can make substantial money, like, not millions of dollars a year, but, like, the best players in those leagues make, you know, $1 to $2 million a year, which is nothing to sneeze at, for sure.
The biggest question around him is just really, does he want to play college basketball anymore? He's like, a lot of the things both of you mentioned are true. Like, he could, like, boost his stock maybe by coming back. Or, like, I think one of the interesting things about him declaring is to find out, like, what would actually happen if he came back and had, like, another monster season. It's like, he took on such a big role for the program this year that he would definitely have it next year, and he would, like, absolutely be, like, in the national spotlight, at least as a great college player. If, like, his pro potential was higher this season than it would be next season, it would make more sense for him to just go pro now, even if it wouldn't be, like, hypothetically long-term better for his draft stock. He's, like, a hard guy to, like, really get a read on. It's, like, some of his skills, like, just, like, don't seem like... Like, his speed isn't really that great. And he's not going to get, like, any taller. Or, like, probably not get that much better at shooting. So, like, it'd be really interesting to see, like, what would happen if, like, he came back. He'd probably be in the same boat draft stock-wise, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah, and then the other thing is, if he does stick in the NBA, it's going to be as a role player. Like, I don't envision a path of him becoming a feature player for an NBA team. I don't think his game translates that well with the way that the NBA is played and how good scouting is. But he's the kind of player that is really easy to game plan for. So, like, if he has a future in the NBA, it's going to be as, like, a PJ Tucker type. You know, as a slightly undersized wing playing up a position, but, you know, guarding and rebounding like hell and just doing all the little things. I don't know if he's... I don't know if he has a mentality to kind of embrace that role. And that would be my one question about whether or not he goes to the NBA, because that's kind of the role that he would have to play. But if you come back to UC for another year, I mean, you're the star. You get the ball. Everything runs through you for another year. And that might be the last time that happens for you while you're playing basketball. And like, I think he's going to play professionally for a long time, whether that's in the NBA, the G League, Europe, whatever. But I don't think he's going to have the kind of opportunity that he's going to have with UC again.
It definitely not, because like, unless like he went to like Europe and like became like a star player, which would be possible. Like, he's not going to be given the opportunity to be like the man on like a high profile program again, where he can pretty much do whatever he wants in the offense, because he's the default point guard. He's like the guy who initiates everything, and when it comes down to it, like, he's the guy who is going to take all the big shots. Because, like, no matter what the roster looks like next year, he's definitely the star. It's like you said, Chris, he could be end like a low-key All-American if, like, depending on what other big-time freshmen end up stepping up this year and getting a lot of the national spotlight. But we saw it with, like, Sean Kilpatrick. Like, he ended up having a monster senior season and was an All-American. Then I don't think he didn't get drafted, did he? I don't think he did.
He went undrafted.
Yeah, cause that same fate would probably happen to Cumberland. And, like, that's almost, like, a best-case scenario. As being, like, one of the better UC players of, like, the last, like, 25 years. Which isn't so bad.
Yeah, and depending on how the rest of the roster shakes out, like, he could be... Like, he put up an insane usage rate this year. It could go another notch up. If things go badly with the rest of the roster.
It's like, would he ever come off the floor, like, in conference play? It's like, he barely came off the floor in conference play this year.
Yeah, it seems like if Logan Johnson ends up going somewhere else, or Curtis doesn't sign, or hell, I mean, Keith Williams even goes as well. Like, Cumberland, you're right. He's going to play 40-plus minutes every game, like, including overtimes. Like, there's just no way he doesn't come off the floor.
Yeah, and that's... I mean, like, he started the year really, really efficient, but, like, you could tell the weight of it, the weight of the role that he was playing got to him eventually, and like his efficiency numbers in conference were drastically lower than what they were in the non-conference, and I just think that's like a cumulative effect. And, you know, what does he do for his senior year if he comes back? Does he get in phenomenal shape so that he can handle that kind of load? Because I don't think it's unfair to say that he wasn't really conditioned for the role that he had this year. I mean, like, there were times where you could clearly see him resting on defense for minutes at a stretch.
Yeah, and it was like, you mentioned Jacob Evans, and, like, that's, like, almost a good contrast. Like, obviously, Jacob Evans was asked to do somewhat less in the offense last year. But, like, when conference play started, Jacob Evans took off to the next level. And that was, like, a completely, like, almost different type of player. And that helped him get drafted in the first round. Like, Cumberland's role was a lot bigger. Like, his numbers went down almost across the board. Like, his three-point shooting especially, like, fell off a ton because he had to, like, take so many attempts. So, yeah, what were you about to say, Chris?
No, I was going to pretty much just tack on exactly what you guys were saying. Yeah, it's... it seems like an offense that's conducive to him, like, flourishing and building on the numbers he had last year. I mean, yeah, there's going to be an adjustment, but I like Brandon said in his own press conference, good coaches adjust to the roster they have, not necessarily you know, try to fit the players into some kind of predefined system. And I got to figure he's preached that to his players quite a bit. And, you know, even though Cumberland might not come off the floor much next year, I mean, he would still show the kind of stats that can put him into a top second round NBA draft, a draft selection spot. I don't know. I don't see, like, Cumberland right now, I don't see how he goes to the NBA. I don't see how he goes to another team. I think by May 29th, he's back on the UC roster.
Yeah, I think that, go ahead, Matt.
That's probably the safest bet. But, like, if I'm going to place a percentage on it, I'm not going to put that at 100%. Like, at 60, 65, 70? I probably wouldn't go any higher than that.
I'd go 65, 35. Just because, like, what I think about, like, I don't think his draft stock would improve over the season. Unless, like, he turned into somebody else. See, he's a 6'5 wing. Like, which is, like, great in college, but in the pros, like, he'd be small. And he's really not that quick either.
Yeah, that's the part of it, Scott, where it's like, in his mind, is he able to improve his draft stocks from where it is right now? Like, in his mind, is an undrafted selection this season with an extra year to play in the G League better than potentially bumping him up to a slightly more enticing undrafted selection after next season? Like, who knows?
Hey, it really would depend on whatever. It only takes one team. It's like we hear that, especially now with the NFL draft coming up. It only takes one team to believe in you. And if he, like, found a team out there that was really interested in his potential and, like Matt said, like, was willing to, like, groom him in, like, the G League and, like, help get him, like, going for his career, like, then that's be a tough opportunity to turn down. Even though coming back to college seems like it would be just, like, better for him as a player.
Yeah, and, I mean, overall for UC, I mean, if he comes back, you've got four open spots that Brandon can work with, and you've also got the ability to sell the idea of playing with the All-AAC Player of the Year and a potential All-American, and he could use that as leverage to bring in guys like Jay Scrupp, who's the number one JUCO in the country, or his teammate, David Sloan, who's another very good player, or someone on the transfer portal like the Marquette the brothers from Marquette who are still out there. Like, having Cumberland back on May 29th is going to be a make or break for whatever Brandon does with the roster next season.
Oh, definitely. If he comes back, like, you're a contender at the top of the league. And if he doesn't come back, you're probably projected to finish, like, I don't know, like, definitely third. And maybe fourth, depending on some of the other teams have coming in. Like, it's a pretty huge swing. I mean, you'll probably be picked to finish third anyway. Just given, like, what Houston's done, like, that Sampson's back in, like, Memphis's recruiting classes in the top 10. But it's, like, a big gap between, like, you expect you to make the tournament, and then, like, it'd be great if you guys made it in.
Yeah, I mean, like, Cumberland is a huge swing, and how this plays out is, I mean, like you said, it is deterministic of how the 2020 season is going to end up playing out. Because if he's there, expectations don't really have to shift that much. But if he's not, and everybody else goes, like all the, in worst case scenario, all the names we've kind of bandied about as potentially going elsewhere actually do, then it gets dicey. Like, then it gets really dicey.
Yeah, it all hinges on him. And then if essentially if he goes, then what reason does Logan Johnson have to really stay? You know, what reason does Keith Williams have to stay? I mean, Curtis at least has an opportunity to get up Cumberland's minutes, but and he still has, you know, 4 years to spend in the program, but then, you know, what transfers does Brandon go after? I mean, it's a lot hinges on that, and we could almost be looking at, you know, a true rebuild heading into next season.
And speaking of transfers real quick, like, one of the names, like, being, like, bandied about is Javon Quinterly, formerly of, like, Villanova fame. Like, he would have to sit out this season. Like, that would be a pretty big swing for, like, Brandon to try to take. Especially since, like, Quinterly really hyped up, like, five-star recruit. But then, like, he was really bad and, like, just never fit in with that team at all. Like, that'd be a pretty interesting swing for the 2021 team.
If that happens, I'm definitely getting a black t-shirt with player 5 written in white. Definitely happening. Nobody likes my FBI joke?
I don't get it.
In the FBI indictment, he is player 5.
Oh. I have not been following that enough, apparently.
It's okay. If they got Quinterly, he would be one of those guys who, like, either would thrive or he would, like, play 1 year and then transfer again.
Yeah, there's no way he sells in to be, you know, a dependable 15-minute-a-game bench player.
It doesn't matter, like, where he goes. I think that's true for, like, almost anywhere. He just seems like I don't know. Like, he got, like, a lot of hype. And hopefully, like, for him just personally, like, he actually pulls through and is good. But it, just from what we've seen and, like, what, like he said, it doesn't seem like like he's going to have a fun college experience.
Yeah, there's some Jermaine Lawrence shades there.
Because whoever he goes to won't be his second choice for a reason. He'll be his third choice for a reason.
Yeah, and like, there's only so much speculation we can do. Like, at this point, we're in 100% wait-and-see mode. We wait and see if Toronto comes back. We wait and see if there's any other transfers that are going to be, you know, that are outgoing. We wait and see if there's anybody coming in through the transfer portal. I mean, we can speculate for days, but we don't really know. It's a waiting game, and it's kind of exciting because this is not really... This is also new, but kind of sucks.
Yeah, it's just the unknown. Like I feel like everyone believes that Brandon's going to put pieces together over the next few months. I mean, he's going to hire a competent staff. He's going to get the roster intact. He's going to probably bring in some quality transfers. But it's just we just don't know any of that right now. Like, he swung for the fences trying to pluck Antoine Pettway out of Alabama. I mean, that would have been a hell of a hire. I mean, the guy who recruited Colin Sexton to Alabama, that would be one hell of a coup. I mean, when we're talking about what Brandon's biggest goals of this staff and how of coming into UC and how to set himself apart from Cronin is, one was recruiting and two was style of play. I mean, you bring in Pettway, all of a sudden you've got a guy out there, upgrade the talent of the roster all of a sudden. I mean, he swung and missed there, but I mean, you see him pounding the pavement trying to upgrade the staff. I mean, it seems like in terms of, like, keeping the roster together, keeping Curtis in the fold, keeping Cumberland in the fold, hiring a staff. I mean, it's got to start with the staff, right? And it just seems like we've just haven't had any kind of movement there really until we see something happening. It seems like nothing's really going on behind the scenes.
And that's, like, one of the areas, like, where we don't really, like, know what's happening. That has, like, a really huge impact on whether some of these guys stay or go. It's, like, there are the coaches. Like, they have, especially with some of the assistants, like, have a lot, like, really tight relationships with the guys that brought them in and, like, recruited them. And, like, it's pretty much, like, all the Savino guys, like, really, who, like, came in are a lot of the names being thrown about transferring. which like, says a lot about like how, what kind of coach he was and like what kind of ties he had to the players that they came for, like the coaches and not just like to be Bearcats.
Well, I mean, like everybody comes for the coach that recruits them. Like that's just universal. It's very rare that, you know, you get a guy who was a fan of the program lifelong and then becomes a Bearcat. That can happen in football, but with the limited roster spots in basketball, that just doesn't happen that often. They are tied to the guy that brought them in. That has always been the case, and that will continue to be the case. I don't really see any issue with that, but like, how much of this current coaching structure is going to depart into camp to Los Angeles is going to be interesting. Because I'm under the assumption that everybody's gone. Strength coach, nutritionist, all the bench guys, I assume they're all going to head out there.
And it seems like Brandon would probably do his level best to retain at least some of them, but he's kind of in a tough spot. It seems like he'd like to bring over some guys from NKU. He'd like to bring in like Chris Shoemate over from NKU, but he's in the running to replace him at across the river. But then it's also like, okay, if Shoemate is hired as a head coach there, does he retain their own strength coach? And then does Brandon just try to keep Michael Rehfeldt on the roster instead of him going to UCLA? Like, it seems like a lot of unknowns out there, and a lot of it stems on what the hell NKU does with their head coaching search.
Yeah, because that's definitely going to give us a lot of clarity on what he's going to do. Because, like, if one of your top assistants is, like, up for a promotion, that changes, like, your whole staff completely, almost. Like, then you have one big, giant spot to fill. Unless it's normally, like, the associate head coach, like, your number two guy.
Yeah, and I mean, we can wildly speculate. We just at this point, we just don't know what's gonna happen.
What do you guys think will happen with some of the redshirt guys on the roster, like Hardnett and Toyambi? It seems like there's a lot of excitement for Hardnett during the off season, but do you think like those guys will end up getting big roles, or do you think like we'll just have to wait and see for them as well?
I feel like if you're an underclassman on this roster, you're basically as good as gone. Like I think those guys, like to Matt's point, you know, they weren't recruited by Brandon, or they probably didn't really know who he was until a couple of weeks ago. They're tied to Mick Cronin's staff, who's, you know, on the other side of the country right now. I feel like guys like Logan Johnson, Hardnett, Gillum, like they're not really tied to this program. And, you know, between now and this fall, I don't know if any of them are going to be the roster.
Yeah, I would be shocked to see both of them stick around. I think we're in for a level of roster turnover that we haven't seen since the transition from Hogs to Kennedy to Cronin. The program as a whole is in much better shape than it was for that transition, but there's a lot of player movement going to be involved, for sure. I just don't see how there won't be.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a case of, like, maybe they don't throw their hat in the ring right now, but it could be a case of Brandon just over-recruits them down the road, you know? Like, he's known to be he's a personable coach. He runs an attractive system. He's now doing it with a lot of financial resources and a lot of historical backing of a UC basketball program. There's nothing to say that he goes out and finds a more productive freshman that replaces Gillum underneath, or Hardnett on the wing. Like, there's nothing to say that, like, even though those two guys don't throw themselves into the portal this season, next spring they don't do the same thing because Brannon signs two talented four-star wings or power forwards to replace them.
Or if really they don't get off the bench this season.
Yeah, that too.
So that could be a sign that you're just not going to play for the new coach.
Yeah, and but the flip side of that is if you do stick around, like, Brennan has a well-earned reputation, I would say, based on his tenure in Northern Kentucky, where player development is such a big part of having success at that level, where if you can consistently develop players, you will have consistent success playing in that conference. So the fact that he was able to do that at NKU with their level of resources, like, if I'm a guy who's at the end of the bench and was redshirted this year, and I dig into that reputation and dig into the research and look at the guys that he's developed over his tenure there, it's enticing to want to stay just because, you know, Mick was going to develop these guys in a particular way. And that particular way had very little to do with being a productive and efficient offensive player. It was first and foremost about learning your defensive rotations, learning how to defend the way that Mick wanted you to defend. And if you did that, you can kind of do what you wanted on offense. The amount of development they're going to get to that side of the ball is going to be so drastically different than anything that, you know, Mick did. And it's not that Mick didn't care to develop offensive players. I mean, Sean Kilpatrick, for Christ's sake, became an All-American based on the work that he put in under Mick, but, like, he's the outlier. There are not a lot of Sean Kilpatricks in terms of development success stories. There aren't a lot of Sean Kilpatricks in this program under Mick.
Yeah, and it made sense that Mick focused so heavily on defense. I mean, that's his bread and butter. That's what got him to where he's at now. And that is something that college coaches try to emphasize with high schoolers. Or transfer players. Like, AAU players and high school players don't play a lick of defense. Like, you try to teach an offensive player offense, and they're like, oh yeah, I've been doing that for years. But trying to teach them to play both ways in a collegiate game, I mean, that's something that every coach emphasizes. Even Brannon, he says, you know, I'm going to coach 60 to 70% of the time we're focusing on defense, which, great. But that's definitely pulling back from what Mick would do, which is 80 to 90% defense, knowing that's his system, that's how he wants to win games. But you're right. I mean, even that 20 to 30% gap, focusing a little bit more on offense, I mean, that could help, you know, guys like Hardnett and Gillum blossom in a collegiate game.
Especially if, like, he worked his system for some of the talent. Like that they have coming back, which, like, you would hope he would do at least. Like, I think one of the things that stood out, like, maybe it was just their roster last year, but they didn't really go very deep. So, like, I wonder, like, if, like, it's one of those situations where some of these guys don't crack the rotation really early on in the season. It's like they're just, like, stuck on the bench. I mean, like, obviously that happened last year at UC, too. It's like they both teams won, like, 7 or 8 deep. But it's different when it's a new coach instead of the old coach.
Oh, yeah, well, what I'm most interested to see is how Brennan treats the regular season. Because, you know, ideally the regular season is a time for experimentation and figuring out, you know, what guys can work in what roles and what situations. Regular season basketball is situational, so that when it gets to the postseason and it's win or go home, you have a better understanding of who functions in that environment and who thrives, who doesn't, who needs to be off the floor when you're in that situation. And, you know, Mick used the regular season as a experimentation ground, but it was not an experimentation in terms of process. It was more in terms of what guys get the process that I like, not what process will work for the guys that I have.
That actually is, like, one of the most interesting things about, like, Brannon, like, taking such a big step up from the Horizon League team to like a team that was in the top 25 almost all year. It's like nothing against like him, but like his teams never beat like anybody good. Like, and they, of course, like they were at such like a big talent disadvantage. But like, it, like how does he like stack up against like some of these, like definitely good coaches that they're going to go up against non-conference, and then especially in league play. Like, you're not playing Wabash College and UNC Asheville, like, every time out. Like, they're going to play, like, challenging non-conference teams. They play Tennessee. Like that's a pretty, like, big step for them. And they go on the road to Ohio State, and I think his first game. Like, a couple, like, really big steps to find out, like, what he brings. Like, what his X's and O's really are when the lights are on really bright. There's a big difference between the NKU stage and the UC stage.
Yeah, and I gotta jump here in a minute or two, but you look at his stats over the last like year or so at NKU. They were sixth in assist rate, which is something he preaches. They were top 50 overall in things like defensive rebounding percentage, offensive efficiency, etc. Amongst peers in the Horizon League, they were first in offense the last 2 years. They're second in defense the last 2 years. Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest question mark when you put a talented mid-major coach on a bigger stage. Like, what's he going to do? But, you know, you got to hope that as the talent level rises, that he's able, you know, as he's able to bring in more talented players, the system that he runs will yield good results against better teams. I mean, that's the biggest question mark, right? And that's something that we might not get fleshed out against Ohio State or throughout the 2019-2020 season. It might take a year. But you got to think, like, he's, you know, all the stats, all the numbers, all the projections, you know, they'll play out to see that, you know, he's eventually successful as a UC coach. I mean, the biggest question mark, right, is he Mick Cronin successful? Is he getting to NCAA tournaments and flaming out, or is he going on deep runs? I mean, who knows? I got to jet, guys, but yeah, I think we're in good hands.
Yeah, like that's the ultimate hope, is that like he's a good coach, and it seems like everybody likes him. Like, he's gonna have a nice baseline for his success at Cincinnati. Is there anything you want to get to, Matt, before we go?
Just one thing I want to touch on in terms of transitioning from the Horizon League to this league. The Horizon League was the fourth most efficient offense last year, and it was, I believe, top 10 the year before that. That's not this conference. it's not an overly efficient bunch, so it's going to be interesting to see how his approach transitions to this conference in this, you know, rock fight heaven.
Especially when you have like programs like UCF and Houston that really grind you down on that end. And not to mention with whatever they're building at South Florida. I can't think of anything else I want to get off my chest. Do you have anything, Matt?
No, I don't. We'll just see how this roster shakes out and what kind of staff he brings together.
It's definitely an exciting time, like, in so many ways. It's like we can be, like, nervous and hand-wring, or we can, like, look forward to whatever Brandon does and how he builds this program in his image. Like Chris said at the very beginning, we don't see this happen with Cincinnati pretty much ever. It's been Bob Huggins, then Andy Kennedy not recruiting for a year, and Mick Cronin. It's like a new coach, a fresh young face in the mix. It's exciting stuff, and like part of the fun is seeing if how well he'll do. So it seems like he's got everybody rooting for him, at least.
Yeah, I'm definitely rooting for him, and I can't wait to see what they're going to look like on the floor.
And hopefully by the next time we record, we'll get some positive answers of who's joining the roster. So thanks for joining us, and as always, go Bearcats.